Hey everybody, welcome to UGA Sports Live. My name is Roddy DeBolse. I'm joined by Dane Young, Jake Roos, and of course the Hall of Famer himself, Jim Donnan. We are reveling in a Georgia win after having to go 2 weeks sitting on a Georgia loss, and we
Georgia game, really.
Georgia game, exactly. It's almost not played. I might later in the show tell you how close that game came to not being played, but I'm at home. Classic City Eats, where I normally do the show from, is closing for a couple months. The reason being, they're moving to Watkinsville. So they're going to have a bigger, badder, more awesome place out in Watkinsville. So we look forward to rejoining Josh and Amy when they move to Watkinsville. So if you're trying to get by there for a Thanksgiving or Christmas feast, you're going to have to wait. So try to hit them up for a New Year's feast when they reopen in January, February out in Watkinsville. So shout out to Classic City Eats for letting us join them on their Backstreet location and for setting us up with their new location out in Watkinsville. So we appreciate that. Also, thanks to Athens Ford, EuroPie, Academia Brewing Company, Aaron Overhead Doors, Posada Leather, and DR Construction Maintenance for sponsoring the show. Let's jump right into it, guys. Coach, I always go to you right off the bat because that's the only reason anybody tunes in is to hear what you have to say. So we did the watch along. I know you were thrilled to see those long, you know, JT Daniels hit those long passes. I know you were concerned a little bit about, you know, some of the misses in the run game. And granted, some of it was schematic, some of it was just a miss. Give me your pros and cons and overall thoughts for the people, for the 16 people who were dumb enough not to watch the watch along show with us, you know, to get an idea of what was going on. But kind of give us your overall thoughts on Saturday's game when JT Daniels had his debut for Georgia.
Well, obviously, I was thrilled with the results. First of all, just to see Pickens trotting out there.
Yeah.
That was a big plus for JT, plus the fact that, you know, anytime you got a guy like him lined up in the different positions that Monk can put him in, it helps the other receivers. And, you know, for JT, it had to be a real rewarding experience having to undergo what he's been through. Certainly, you couldn't have picked a better opponent to go against unless you maybe played against a high school secondary. But I was really happy for him that he could go out there. You know, I picked him as my mouth-watering guy 2 weeks in a row, and we finally played the game. But he showed a really good feel for the game, a really good arm strength. Certainly, you know, his mobility's lacking, but it's nothing you can do about that. And it hurts a running game without the threat of a quarterback run. There's no question. Their defense is set up to really disrupt. That's what they do. They play that 3-3, 3-5-3 look, and they slant an angle every time. So we talked about it on the pregame show. They're going to make you look bad because they take so many chances. But I don't think I've ever seen a team give up three passes in a row where the guy in the end zone was catching a touchdown pass. We dropped two of them, but the third time was a charm. But that's got to be after 50-some years. I've never seen that happen where three straight plays you ended up with a guy catching a touchdown or dropping it. But going forward, you know, we got a lot of the same here the next couple opponents outmanned, but I'm concerned about our defense playing the ball in the air, regardless if it's an air raid or Bama or Florida, whoever it is. So we just giving up a high percentage of pass completions, and we're going to have to do something about that. But we knew going in the game that we were going to have to out-execute them because they run all that short stuff. But good win, good to be back playing, and hopefully South Carolina will have enough guys this week to go out there and play. I know they're right on the bubble too.
Yeah. Before I get to you, Dane, I want to let people realize we started telling people on, I think, Thursday how close this game was to not being played. And we started telling people, look, Mississippi State is on the line. And you put into our group chat a couple guys that opted out. And then we found out, you know, three more. One guy tested positive, as two of his roommates were going to have to sit out. And as early as Friday morning, I mean, people were basically plane watching to see if Mississippi State was going to get on the plane. And I'll let people know that Mississippi State actually told the SEC, it does not look like we're able to play. And the SEC and other people said, well, are you sure about that? And they basically kind of, I won't say they weren't, I don't want to say they were pressured into it, but they're like, look, you know, some of this is on you because you've had guys opt out. You know, you have walk-ons that can play, you know, and they did, they traveled with some walk-ons. Mississippi State did not bring a ton of players to Georgia, but they played really well. I think they played their best game. I'm glad they did. But as of Friday morning, before they got on that plane to travel to Athens, they were preparing to cancel that game. That's how close we came to being played. So despite that, I thought Mississippi State played a hell of a game. You did the film don't lie. You did the offense. I mean, the defense Sunday night. And then today we have the offense. So tell us what you saw from that game that you want to give us your pithy takes on.
Two quarterbacks that were accurate. I don't know the last time I've seen that in a game that Georgia was featured in. I mean, these two guys were hitting everything. Now, the passes that JT Daniels were hitting were much further down the field, probably a little bit more difficult. But Will Rogers at Mississippi State, I mean, the trajectory that he could be on with Mike Leach in the next couple of years, if they build around him, I was blown away with him. Second college start, and he did that. Now, I know some of those throws were easy, but you've got to get your team in position, and then you have to execute it. Georgia's missed a lot of easy throws this year too. So, you know, easy doesn't mean a whole lot in that sense. So the quarterbacks, I was just impressed with. I am thrilled for JT Daniels. And people that have listened to this or read my work on UGASports.com, they will know that coming into it, I was among the biggest critics of JT Daniels because I did not see what he did Saturday as a possibility based on the stuff in the past. And frankly, from the people that I've talked to and the film that I've watched, Saturday was his best performance, period. In practice, in games, however it may be. Now, look, it was a damn good performance. And so that's a high bar to reach. And to hopefully he can replicate that and have that kind of success at Georgia. But as I wrote in a column after the game, what I was most impressed with was how awesome he was with his interviews with the media members, because I thought he connected with the media. I thought he connected with the fans. A lot of the graciousness, a lot of the respect that he has for the situation he's been in, that showed. He really won in that post-game news conference. And I'll take this chance. Look, Drew Butler called me out a little bit on his podcast with Aaron Murray, and he said I was writing a love story, a little novel to JT Daniels. And you know what? Maybe I am. And look, if you want to get a little rivalry
not
here,
that there's podcasting, anything wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
If you want to get a rivalry podcast to podcast, Drew, I'm happy to do it. But when it comes to words, realize this, Drew, when you put down the football helmet and you put down that jersey, you're no longer a punter. You're just like me now, Drew. And you may have gone to the Grady College of Journalism. I did too. I worked there. So you don't want any of this, Drew.
Fight. So, Jake, can you give us your take on it without actually calling down the wrath of former players and media members? Can you give us something safe, you know, that
I want to talk some shit to Todd Gurley right off the bat.
I'm willing to go with Drew Butler. I'm not willing to go with Todd Gurley. No, sir. No,
I think that it was. I don't know. It was a really mixed bag of a performance, I thought. I mean, there's no denying JT was great, right? But this defense has regressed over the course of this season. I don't think that's unfair to say. And for the people, you know, who the comments I sort of got when I was talking about that on Twitter on Saturday, where people saying, oh, well, we're just decimated by injuries. We're missing two key guys and Jordan Davis and Richard LeCount. Those things are true. I don't disagree with that at all. And I give you that. But my other take on that is that Georgia's second and third string guys should be able to hang with Mississippi State's 49 plus walk-ons any day of the week. And I really thought Georgia should have been able to walk away with that game. Had the defense been able to answer the bell a little bit better, I think that they certainly could have. You know, that game to me is Georgia fans, I don't even know are given enough credit to JT Daniels, even for all we've heard this week, because that game is totally different without him under center. I mean, I think Georgia loses that game if it's Stetson or Dwan Mathis, just based on what we've seen in previous weeks. I don't know. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, I guess, in that regard, but I don't know. I think that there are some concerns now. You've answered one big question, but I feel like you've really kind of created another question moving forward.
Coach, let me go to you with that, because to me it feels like the issues you saw Saturday on the defense were not the same issues you saw against Florida and Alabama. Those are times where, you know, some you got beat a little bit more, but that offense that Mississippi State runs is odd. So to me, I don't want to say that there are systematic issues on the defense when you wouldn't judge a defense that faced the triple option for the first time all year. And when they couldn't stop it, you're like, oh, well, the defense sucks. But maybe, I mean, did you see something more indicative of some defensive issues there in that game? To me, it's almost a one-off the way the way Mississippi State plays.
I think we adjusted pretty well the second half once we got a good feel for them. You held them down a lot better. I mean, you know, that they were the week before they got 204 yards completing 35 passes and Vanderbilt basically stymied them, but they didn't have any turnovers, which they've been plagued by some games, 6 or 7 turnovers, Kentucky, Arkansas, games like that. And we didn't get any of those. And our linebackers, just by their initial drops, were dropping too deep and the ball was just going in front of them. And then both our star and our dime guys had trouble reacting to these underneath routes, both Stevenson and Webb. And then Webb got beat on man coverage. But I think the one thing I would say is definitely we would have won. We probably might not have won as good an offense without JT, but we have seen similar passing by Stetson against Auburn, the 10 completions to in the game to Kyaris Jackson, the touchdown throw to Pickens. We're just a different team with Pickens in the game. Regardless of the great play, we give Daniels all the credit in the world, but he just makes the other team have to do so many other things. And I just think that still today, Zach Arnett, their defensive coordinator, can't believe that we threw the ball like that. I mean, if you go into the game, just like Jake was saying, you got to stop Georgia running game and make them throw to beat you. And they couldn't have done much better stopping our running game. But our passing game was really outstanding. I do feel like the number one issue that I would have if I'm Kirby is our reaction when the ball's in the air. We very seldom – we've dropped a couple interceptions for sure, but we very seldom tip the ball or – knock the ball away from a defender. I mean, we're off the guys, even when we're playing against the regular team. So that's something we got to work on hard, breaking on the ball between now and the rest of the year, I think.
I think, Jake, I do agree with you about the defense. There were times when Georgia did not seem to know the down and distance, you know.
Well, the one that sticks out in my mind was in the end zone. They're playing with their backs up against the wall. I mean, Mississippi State standing right there, and they're playing 5 yards deep in the end zone, it felt like. I mean, I was like, you know, they know you can press here. They were getting it from the other side all night. Mississippi State was all over them, loading the box with 8. But, you know, Georgia was playing off very early on. I know it was driving people crazy, but that in particular series, that I thought was very strange.
I agree. And there were times because we talked about this in the watch along. I'm like, look, you finally get them into a third and long, you know, which is something you've been fighting for, because they've had great success on first down, great success on second down. And you got them on a 3rd and 8 and you're standing 13 yards deep, you know, and they just run a little slant and all of a sudden it's a first down. You're like, you fought like hell to get them here. And then there was some confusion at times, like, so maybe there is something there, but I think it was just a defense. Georgia finally did. And like I said, in the second half, adjust. But Dane, why didn't Mississippi State ever adjust to the passing game? It's like, we're going to stop the run. Okay, you've done that. You've kept Georgia to 8 yards into the fourth quarter, but you're still letting JT Daniels light you up. They never seemed to drop anybody back into coverage. I mean, JT Daniels was, like Coach pointed out, you had 3 back-to-back-to-back plays where JT Daniels was able to throw all the way to the end zone. First 2 were dropped. 3rd 1, Kyaris Jackson catches. You think by the 3rd time they've had wide open receivers in the end zone, maybe you don't throw cover 0 at them, which is exactly what JT after the game, he said, yeah, I was 3rd and 20, but I saw that they were in cover 0. I knew we were about to score. You know, if he'd had a clipboard, he'd have thrown it in the air like Lane Kiffin. I didn't see any adjustments on the Mississippi State side of the field, Dane.
Yeah,
I think one thing before you let Dane answer that is that the first half, we had the ball so few plays that they probably figured that they were doing better than they thought they would. So they'd go another quarter with it and see if we could still do it. And then we did. And then by then it was too late. But still, if you get on the plane, which they did, and you commend them for doing it, and you know the score is going to be 24-24 going into the fourth quarter, they would have had a conga line around the Coliseum down there, because they would, nobody would have thought that. I mean, this team has been very inept offensively ever since the game against LSU. And really, as Kirby has talked about, the blueprint for playing these guys, Washington did it, everybody in the SEC's doing it, is drop eight and make them throw the ball in front of you, and they're going to get some drops, they're going to get some penalties. But, you know, it was a perfect storm for them that none of that happened. They never stopped themselves hardly at all. And the other thing that's alarming to me is the amount of penalties we had. You know, big plays. You know, I used to tell our guys, if you're blocking on the perimeter, that's the easiest way for an official to call a holding call, because that's his job. He's right beside you. He's 5 yards from you. And if you do anything even remotely close to holding, they're going to call it out there. Now, in the pits inside, there's a lot of holding missed by everybody. But, and certainly, Roddy's gone. I hear him every week talking about it, and it's true. But we had three penalties on the screens that just killed us. And then with him, you know, a block back by Darnell Washington, he's got to learn that you can't go in there and crunch a guy. You got to go in there and shield him. I mean, that's not a rule that they made for any reason but to protect the defensive player. So they got him on one of our best runs of the night, where he went in motion and came inside and hit a guy when he was, you know, unprotected. So 5 15-yard penalties. The one on they called on I guess they're 10 yards, some of them, but the one they called on Herring, I think, was kind of Mickey Mouse for sure. But the only chance a team like that has is for you to let them get those kind of penalties.
I will say, I think Darnell Washington has a hard time not crushing people when he touches them. I think that's just indicative of who he is.
True.
Dane, you mentioned the accuracy of both quarterbacks. And I remember at one point they had combined and thrown 60 passes, only 10 of which had landed incomplete. So they were 50 of 60 combined at one point.
Yeah. And look.
No interceptions.
Yeah, exactly.
No interceptions, and I would say JT Daniels only had one that was interception-worthy play or a turnover-worthy play, and that was on that very first drive. And even watching that, I'm not so sure if it was just completely a misfire from him, or if he just didn't see where George Pickens was trying to go, or if it was just way behind Burton. So even that one, yeah, I had a little question after I rewatched it in real time. I was like, oh, that's just a horrible throw. This is a terrible start for Daniels. But obviously, that didn't persist. And that was one of the concerns that we had, you know, based on PFF grades from his freshman year at USC, is that he would just throw the ball up and it would be either an interception or a play that the defense did not make. That happened almost 30 times his freshman year at USC. And that was not going to fly in the SEC. He didn't come remotely close to doing that. Now, look, like Coach said, there's going to be more talented defensive backfields that he's going to face, even in the next couple of games, than what Mississippi State threw out there. You would ask where –
You never know. These teams keep opting out. I mean,
I guess
it's not going to be that hard.
Corners of South Carolina are out.
South Carolina's dropped three starters in secondary, but you're right. But it's a perfect storm for him too. Just to, not having to play a pressured up game of playing for the championship or anything like that. And that's the way I'm really happy for that point too. He's just, and everybody's behind him. The players, it's obvious that the players rallied around him and the staff and the fans. And fortunately, I thought that was a good response by his dad to really tell everybody that what Kirby's been saying is what the situation, although I'm sure people think his dad's probably a conspiracy guy too after saying that. But the guy just wasn't ready, and that's the whole deal. I mean, he's still not ready on his lower body. We watched that film Don't Lie thing and listened to Brent talking about planting off. You know, he's throwing a lot with his arm still. When he can use his lower body a little better with more confidence, he'll have even more zip on the ball.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about the offensive line and their performance in that game, because I think that that was one of the reasons, and that's what I've kind of told people, is why I don't think you saw JT until this point. Outside of his own personal health, it was just the mobility or the ability to be mobile back there. I think they needed a guy who could bring that to this point, you know, more so than JT was able to bring. You know, did you see some issues with the offensive line that made you kind of think that as well?
Yeah, I thought we had pretty good protection considering how many passes we called. We did have three sacks. Two of them to me were just coverage sacks where he held on the ball, which that could happen a little bit when you're playing your first game and your timing. But the other one was just an overmatch. They just outmatched us and got, you know, beat Schaefer. And both our guards had trouble with the slants. There's no question about that. That much movement, we haven't seen it all year. And, you know, you'd think that both of them being senior players could handle that better. But they a lot of the stuff that South Carolina did last year, remember the way they moved Kinlaw around and got into our backfield. And, you know, we not only had the three sacks, I think we had 9 lost yardage runs in that game, which is inexplicable, really. I mean, you can't have that many and expect to get. And that's why I thought maybe Munkin probably should have thrown a little more, because if they're going to try to do that, you don't need to force the run. I mean, hey, go for it. If they can't cover us, I'd just soon throw it every down, you know, as them trying to do that. So,
but I agree 100%, Coach. And that was the question UJ alum had, UJ alum 95 had on Twitter. So thanks, Jake, for asking that question. And we saw at one point, I almost felt like Georgia said, look, we're going to try forcing the run. And they ran it on 3 straight plays, got nowhere, and had to punt. So for the people who said, well, you just got to force your will on the other team. And you can't force 5-on-7. It doesn't happen. One thing you don't need to force, though, are some of the fantastic deals over in Athens Ford. They have their Built for the Holiday sales event going on right now. And, of course, if you actually go out and buy a new or pre-owned vehicle at Athens Ford, you are going to be helping out the local Boys and Girls Club, because they get a bike, a toy, a coat, or anything like that. Every time you buy a vehicle, they put a present under that giant Georgia-themed tree. There's a big red Ford F-150 there, and the trunk of it, the cab of it, and the bed are just filling up with toys. So they're going to deliver those. And shout out to Geno Atkins, who took care of 20 different kids recently as part of his Christmas with Gino. That store will be coming out soon. But the folks over at Athens Ford are doing the same thing. They're taking care of kids in the community, and they will take care of you. Almost all of their vehicles, if they're not dramatically discounted, like $13,000 off a Ford F-150, you could get $8,000 off a Ford Fusion, or you can get the financing deal, 0% APR financing for 60 months for qualified buyers. So it's like, I want $8,000 off Fusion, or do I want to finance it for 0% financing for 60 months? Let me see. What about a Ford Explorer? Well, I can get $10,000 off or 0% APR financing for 72 months for qualified buyers. So they have amazing deals in their Built for the Holiday sales event. It's an unreal deal, especially on these 2020s, because you know the 2021s are coming down the pipe. And Athens Ford is one of the few places you can actually get a large selection of certified pre-owned vehicles. They are the number one certified pre-owned vehicle dealer in the state. There's a reason for that. They get more than anybody else. And those are fantastic vehicles. I bought one myself. Still looks brand new 4 years later. Just saying, that's a great option for you. Plus, you will help folks in the community. And if you're down south, and if you're down in the Liberty County area, you probably can't get all the way up to Athens Ford. You can maybe come up, watch a game, and drive home in a new truck. But if you need some help down there, check out our friends at DR Construction Maintenance. That's Ronnie Brown, big time sponsor of the show, big time sponsor of our. Always great with a question to come in, and he's really ready to help the folks down in Liberty County, Long County, Byron County, Bryan County. So check out DR Construction and Maintenance. Jake, I'm sure we have a ton of questions after that game. I know we have our own, but you want to hit up somebody that's put one on the dog event at UGA Sports?
Yeah, I like this one for Coach. A lot of questions, like we said, about the run game. Curb Stomper 21 over on the board, which I really appreciate that name. He says, Coach, what are your thoughts on our run game scheme? I understand it's difficult to run into 7 and 8 man boxes, but would adding some pin and pull schemes help gain extra gaps to the play side? Hopefully Saturday was not a fluke and we will threaten defenses vertically to create lighter boxes to run into.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things you can look at that are good. You know, we've added some a little bit of counter stuff where we pull the guard and tackle. He's talking about power where you block down and pull the guys around. You know, our guards are just not that agile on the perimeter, but that's certainly something you could look at. But the other thing that I would think that we could do that when JT gets a little bit more in the groove here, and certainly he's good about calling the protections and all that, and maybe a few more flat out RPOs where you call a run and if it doesn't look there you just pull it and throw the ball. We didn't see much of that the other night. It's mostly just predetermined passing or predetermined run, so maybe that'll help you a little bit to eliminate the box. And then you know, the quick pitch play looked good a couple times, but they ran it down. We don't have, and maybe a little bit more misdirection the way they're flying around. But again, there's a give and take situation here. Every one of those zone, inside zone plays that we got stomped with, Bennett or Mathis would have kept the ball on the outside because it's a very easy read. But we don't have them playing. Neither one of them can throw like this guy either. So you can't have both right now with what we have with our team. A little bit of that we had with Bennett when he was, you know, full speed, but and throwing pretty well early in the year until he hurt his shoulder. But that's a good question. Pin and pull, I love it. I'd like to see it, but I'd whole lot rather see those bombs than I would that.
I'll add too that with the personnel grouping, you look at a guy like Andrew Thomas last year, and I know the scheme is different with a new offensive coordinator, but that first game against Vanderbilt with a sweep coming from the other side, Thomas is able to get one little chip block and then release downfield. That's a tackle that could do that. Georgia doesn't have tackles that can do that right now. They're blocking around the box and the guards are a little bit slow to get where they need to get to. And you're relying on new tight ends in the system. So there's a lot of moving pieces in terms of these blockers. You weren't going to replace an Andrew Thomas anyway. I mean, that's a legendary kind of football player at Georgia. And so we're still seeing some progress on the offensive line. I think it's progress, but it's not where Georgia was even probably toward the middle of last year.
Yeah, and I would give them some love here at Thanksgiving. I'm thankful for the protection we had. I mean, overall, they had a pretty clean pocket the whole night considering everything. I thought it was pretty dang good. I thought our backs did a really good job, both backs. And even Kenny McIntosh stepped up in there and took on those backers. And that's not been something we've seen a lot. We hadn't seen a lot of teams plug in their backers this year. But they stepped up there and met him like a man, you know, hit him in the sternum. And
Kirby called that out after the game. That was one of the first things he mentioned was the
blitz pickup.
The blitz pickup, so.
I got another question here while we're on the offensive line. This was something that a lot of people were focused on Saturday night, and I think a lot of people have been thinking about all season. This one from Coastal VA Dog. He says, we've had a lot of batted balls this year. I realize sometimes the defense just makes a good play. However, it seems like this is a trend this year. Some folks blame the quarterback. Other people say it's the offensive line. I fall into the latter camp. What say you, and how do you fix this issue?
Well, it's just a tendency of the coaching now from a defensive perspective. When you have a double team at the point of attack, or when you have run your initial move, whether it's a slam or a spin move or a swat move or whatever it might be, and you don't get any movement as far as pressure on the quarterback, they're taught to stand there and hold their arms up instead of trying to, you know, just go against an irresistible force there. So that's why you see probably a little more batted balls in all sports. That's the technique. It used to be coaches just say, hey, fight them to the end. Keep going, keep going, keep going. But now, you know, you run that initial one or two steps and it doesn't work. Get your hands up, because most of these guys are 6'3", 6'4", anyhow. Then they put their arms up. So I see it in pro ball. I see it in college. Everybody, you just see a lot of it. And we saw one in particular the other night where Schaefer was fighting the guy, and then, you know, the guy had run a bull move on him and had pressed him back, and he was really in the quarterback's face, and the guy got his arms up, kind of like Kentucky did on Salyer when they got the interception. So it's just a way of life now. I mean, that's the way people rush.
Wrong.
I figured it was because JT was too short.
That's it. We're told that tall quarterbacks never have balls batted at the line, only the short ones.
The batted balls are not as much of a concern to me as the inconsistency with the snaps. That's been a little bit of an issue all year.
Coach, why isn't that fixed yet?
I don't think you're ever going to fix it. I mean, the guy, you're going to have to live with it. I mean, he certainly plays so good. As long as he doesn't snap it over his head like some of these teams do. And he's done that a couple of times. But,
yeah, I'll say early in the season we saw a couple.
You got to look at it a little bit. You got a new quarterback back there, a new cadence, and maybe he wasn't as smooth as Hill's used to with Fromm all last year. And, you know, it's the first time. And the guy's using a little Southern Cal accent compared to that Southern drawl, you know. So maybe it hurt him a little bit. But the other thing is the quarterback's got to show a little dexterity there too. We used to work on it all the time with your punters and your extra point holders and your quarterbacks, bad balls where you have to. And the difference now, though, is they're having to do so much reading of the defense and calling out the protection. Sometimes they don't concentrate and it's not a routine catch for them. And any kind of snap that's not exactly perfect gets magnified if they're not looking it in. So it's a little bit of the quarterback's a lot more of Hill. His legs are so wide. I'm just so glad when he gets them between them, man.
I want to bring up something else about those snaps. And I think Dane brings up a good point. The concerning aspect there. When we're watching the game and you see those cornerbacks, they're, you know, the linebackers, they're up on the line, then they're dropping out, stuff like that. The offensive line's calling out protections, they're shifting protections, they're changing protections. The quarterback is, you know, calling audibles, changing the plays of the line. Then you go for the snap, and what does the quarterback have to do? Is drop his eyes for a second. If he's bouncing and looking around for the ball, he's still got his eyes down. Things change when he looks up. And all of a sudden, it's like, ooh. It may just be a fraction of a second. You think, oh, well, he just bobbled him, and it shouldn't affect the play. It does affect the play. It affects the play a major way, and that's why I think, Dane, you bring up a good point there on the danger there. Coach, am I off?
Hey, it's disconcerting. I mean, okay. It's the same thing with the fumble snap. You know, last night I watched the game with the Bucks and the Rams, and the Rams dropped quarterback center exchange a couple of times. It's not as easy for the guys to get the quarterback center exchange as it used to be under center because everybody grows up being a shotgun guy. Yeah. And, you know, you see teams at the end of the game when they're kneeling down, they don't even get under center. They snap it back there and then kneel down. Some teams do it, but most teams get under center. It's not as routine as it used to be, that's for sure.
Yep. That brings up a good point. If you want to break out of your routine, folks, we would. I know it's Tuesday about 12:36, and we're talking the Georgia versus MSU game. We'll look ahead to South Carolina here in a bit, but it's about time for lunch. I know I haven't eaten today. I'm starving. So my thought now that it's a Tuesday, I'm probably going to head out to pick up my phone and dial up the YourPie app. It's Double Points Tuesday. Every time you use the app on YourPie, you get twice as many points as you would normally, which gets you free pizzas, free calzones, free ice cream, free sandwiches, free pasta. They now have a 14-inch pizza. That's a new thing from YourPie. They normally get your personalized ones. Now they have a 14-inch pizza. So for someone who's starving, that sounds fantastic to me right now. And, of course, they also have their hot honey pizzas, which is their specialty. I'm sure that as the holidays get closer, those are seasonal. So they're probably going to change it to something else. So if you have missed out on that hot honey pizza, you need to get on it right away. And again, do it on a Tuesday because Tuesday's the double points day. And those points on the YourPie app add up very quickly. I have quite a lot of free pizzas and breadsticks and gelato on my app because I use it all the time. And if, let's say you want to have a little bit more fun on your lunch break, you can swing out by Academia Brewing Company. Great place to watch the South Carolina game this week. Huge, giant TV screens. Place is immaculate. They have a lot of room there. So the tables are really well spaced out. So you can watch the game and with a bunch of your friends and not have to worry about anybody being too close. And of course, the thing is they have a ton of alcohol out there because they are a brewery. So the tables and everything are almost antiseptic. It's just you can operate in there in that restaurant. It's so phenomenally clean. Plus, they just canned up their two times IQ IPA. It's a great IQ IPA. It's a great IPA. If you've not ever tried it, you'll love it. Now they have their double version of it. So the 2X is a hazy double IPA. So basically take the great IPA they have and multiply it times two and then can it. So
and check out get an Uber home.
Yeah. but they get also the food out there is great. So I know I say if you're looking to have a more fun lunch, you know, yeah, you can go out there and get blitz. And of course, they have the they have the flights with the different cookies. So you get four different beers and four different cookies with it. And of course, they have Jack's cheesecakes out there. So tons of great food out there. And I'm talking about desserts because again, I'm starving. So, but when you get a chance, check out the new menu items and new beers out at Academia Brewing Company and the new pizza and double points from our friends at Europie.
Luke Goddard in the YouTube chat says he doesn't believe Roddy eats pizza or drinks IPAs anymore because of the weight that you've lost. And I would say he still does. He just walks there and then walks home.
I do. That's 7 miles a day, baby. 7 miles a day. That's what you got to do to get that pizza and not feel guilty about it. All right, Jay, hit us up with another question, brother.
All right. This one was pretty interesting, and we've had kind of a couple ways it's been phrased. I liked this one, though. This one from D-Rock UGA over on the vent. He says,
D-Rock, I know who that is.
He says, considering the fact that the NCAA has stated that no one loses a year of eligibility this year, which seniors do you think the coaching staff tries to convince to return next season? Some players like LeCount are likely gone to test the NFL. Others could stay, help the team, and improve their stock with NFL GMs. Anybody jump off the page to you guys?
Yeah, I just want to address that because I talked to a couple of coaches about that, not only here, but other friends of mine that are coaches around the country with a new rule that's set up. Just for real quickly, everybody knows you got 85 on your scholarship roster, but if a senior comes back, he's not going to count against the 85 next year. So that in itself.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. Thanks, Coach. I didn't know how that would work.
Well, I mean, I didn't know that till last week, but I saved it for you here today so you can celebrate and go out and get something to eat. But the main thing is a senior comes back, he won't count against 85. Anybody else, the initials. And, you know, and I also asked Kirby about the Juke, the 1AA. It's a different question about the 1AA. And he said the only problem with there, that's going to take away from your initials. So your initials count, you know, 25. So there probably won't be as much as that as I thought there might be. But the thing that everybody's got to remember, these guys have been playing football for 4 years, sometimes 5 years, going in the grind. This year, 19 weeks of practice. I just don't know if there's going to be a lot of guys that want to come back and play another year just to be go through that kind of grind. You know, I mean, off season, special, you know, going through spring practice, summer work, and just be a contributor on the team. Now, if the guy has been a junior or sophomore and never played much, but now has a chance to maybe be a starter, you can maybe see that happening. But, you know, a guy like Rochester who had an ACL, it's going to be hard to come back and try to play, even unless he gets a chance with a pro camp. But I don't know anybody in particular that jumps out on me that would come back just for a fifth or sixth year.
Well, a quick rundown of those guys. Trey McKitty, a graduate student. Prather Hudson, a graduate student.
He's going pro.
Devontae Wyatt, a senior.
Probably going to get pro workout.
Julian Rochester, a senior. Walter Grant, we just haven't seen much out of him this year. Ben Cleveland, a senior.
Pro.
Daniel Gothard.
He's been here 76 years. Come on.
Justin Schaefer, a senior.
He'll get a pro workout.
Monty Rice, a senior.
Pro.
Mark Webb, a senior.
Pro.
Nate McBride, a senior.
Nate might be a guy that would give it a shot because he's put a lot of work in and hadn't got to play a lot, but he might be a guy that could help us for sure. He's been a great special teams player.
Demetrius Robertson, a senior. That's an interesting one that a lot of people.
He'll come back. Up.
More than likely come back.
DJ Daniel, a senior.
I would think he'd probably get a pro workout.
Jermaine Johnson, probably a pro workout, I'd think, for him as well.
Yeah.
I don't think the other two are Malik Herring and Richard LeCount. I think those guys are probably –
And I think most fans think, oh, well, if they're not going to be a high draft pick, why wouldn't they come back? Well, like Coach said, some of these guys, I'm thinking of Ben Cleveland and Julian Rochester that have been around for so long. The guys that they came in with, their best friends likely on the team, they're all gone. And so just from the social standpoint, sometimes it's not going to be that same connection point to everyone. You look at a guy like Ben Cleveland, he's getting married, right? So it's like he's in that phase of life change. Rochester is going to have to determine if football is part of his future with some of the devastating injuries he's had. I look at a guy like Schaefer, and I think Justin Schaefer may consider because of the neck injury. Maybe he thinks that's time he missed out on. I don't know.
But Rochester redshirted last year. I mean, you know, so – he would be going into his sixth year. It's definitely, as much as I love football, as much as our fans love football, as much as you want to rep the G, boy, it's a big, big commitment. It's a grind. I'm telling you, these guys work. Particularly this year, where you've not got to play many games and they've just been going at it for so long. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it would have happened and he had that rule without missing spring and all, I just don't know how many guys would want to go through the grind to hope that they might be able to play a little bit. If they thought they could be a starter and they hadn't been one, I could see that.
Yeah,
I was ready to be done with college when that time came. So I can only imagine, you know, if you're a guy who has spent 4, 5, 6 years just getting your ass busted left and right every day, you know, in addition to your schoolwork, like that, I didn't even have that part to compete with. And so I can imagine some of those guys being like, yo, I'll just take a chance on it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And some of them have graduated already. They'd have to go into graduate level classes and they're like, look, I don't, this school's not for me. I've been doing this 5 years now. I'm done. I'd like to give being a pro a shot, and if I don't make it, I can jump into my career, you know. So
well, and college is like the best time of life, but the first thing you hear from people when they graduate college is, I don't want to live around college students anymore.
Well, not only that, yeah, I think the bigger question is, what about some of the juniors that we all automatically expected to go pro who are like, wait, well, then, you know, this year didn't count, maybe they'll come back. To me, it's not so much the seniors as some of the juniors that you just automatically assumed were gone, who may not be.
Davis, probably gone. Jake Camarda,
JT Daniels, Zamir White, yeah, James Cook, sure. You know,
Jamari Sawyer.
I would just assume running backs are going to go. I mean, yeah. That clock just goes so much faster for running backs.
Yeah, but I think those two might come back. So that could get very interesting. Speaking to be very interesting, I also mentioned taking a walk the other day. Actually walked on Millage Avenue. That is a very interesting walk to have. Now I will tell you that. So
it's a fun walk.
One of the best places to get to walk. And then I swung by our friends over at Masada Leather because they're writing 5 points. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go in there and look around at some of the gifts that I've been telling people to buy. And I thought that my wallet was going to burn a hole in my pants because everything I saw in there I really wanted. Masada is at the showcase for handmade and quality leather gifts. You know, it's stuff that they make there. They have bags, belts, leather goods from Italy, you know, Birkenstock footwear. The handmade wallets that Urban made are just phenomenal. Plus, they have briefcases by Scully. If you're looking for some people who are graduating at this in the holiday time, some of those briefcases are phenomenal. I'm very impressed with them. They had holiday belts. They had these belts that have an imprint on the back of like holly leaves and stuff like that. Those are really cool. There's a lot of jewelry out there. I didn't expect to see jewelry when I went in there. leather bracelets, hats, vests. I mean, hell, they even had socks. So point being, there's a ton of neat stuff in Masada Leather and Gifts. You need to swing by when you get a chance. It's between the Royal Peasant and the Earth Fair, right in Five Points. And Five Points is the redevelopment of Five Points has been very special. So it's a great place to go down, find a place to park, take a walk down Millage, and then pop into Masada Leather and Gifts, and they'll take care of you. Also want to mention our friends, it's this time of year that
they got curbside too.
They do have curbside. So if you want something, you can order it online, then swing by and they'll bring it out to your car.
Good.
Easy breezy. And of course, I like the belts. I like the fact that, you know, they will make custom, you know, they're long when you're in the store, but then they'll have them fit to you, you know? So it's like, okay, for me, I would have bought a 44-inch belt before, but now I would not have to worry about that. I have a much shorter belt now, and they got, you know, so two different belts, and actually I do need some new belts. So hint, guys. And if you need something done on your house, if you need some work done on your garage door, check out our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors. They are great sponsors of this podcast and our website. If you read my 3-2-1 column the other day where I thought that JT Daniels would be serviceable, yeah, I had to eat a little crow on that one. That was brought to you by our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors. They do not adjust the, luckily, they do not check the content of my editorials. They just sponsor it. And that is not an indication of how good quality they will provide. The garbage of my editorials does not match the quality of their work. Their quality is fantastic. So much so they have expanded their service area gigantically. Now they are all over Gwinnett County, Cobb County, DeKalb County, Barrow County, Habersham, Stevens, Dawson, Hall, North Fulton, Jackson, Forsyth. In my little mirror, I see White, I see Oconee, I see Clark, I see Walton, I see Cherokee. So if anybody remembers having your name called out on Romper Room, if you're hearing Hall County and all these other counties and cities in North Georgia, you are almost guaranteed to be in the service area of our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors, Ryan Lucy and the folks. And this is the time of year when they actually do some charity work as well. Their full-time employees will go to Ryan and everybody puts in a note of saying, hey, I think here is somebody we could help. And they go out and provide free service to those people. So it's a great time of year. We have a lot to be thankful for. And I'm thankful that Aaron Overhead Doors has been a longtime sponsor of our show.
What the hell is Romper Room, you old bastard?
Is that that old place that was on Baxter a long time ago?
Let me look up on my computer screen here on my internet thing. I'm going to dial up how to fire a millennial. Do you need a safe space and a crying blanket?
I did want to touch real quick after last week's show. We did talk about recruiting a lot. Georgia goes out and adds Smile Munden to the mix last Wednesday morning. A very
way to ruin his moment by telling us he was going to commit, Jake.
A very crisp ceremony, if I do say so myself. Been a while since we've had an outside commitment in the morning and in November. So I'd forgotten what that one was like, but it was a cool ceremony. It was good to be out there. Paulding County represented well. Coach Van Spence, if you haven't had a chance to go read his comments over on UGASports.com, make sure you go check those out. I thought that he had some great things to say about that young man. Really impressive young, a really impressive family he comes from as well. And I thought the comments that Coach Spence gave about Georgia's coaching staff were really outstanding. I think that that's kind of been a consistent theme that we've heard throughout these coaches' corners that we've done this season, is what a great job Georgia's coaches have done in recruiting these guys. You hear the words consistency mentioned very frequently. You hear the guys talking about, you know, it's, there's no smoke and mirrors. Georgia kind of just lays it out there, says, this is who we are. This is what we can offer. And that's that. You know, they're not trying to blow smoke from what these guys are saying. Coach, anything that jumps off the page to you about Smile Munden when you've had a chance to check him out?
Yeah, I mean, just a very good guy in space. Has played, you know, on the offensive side of the ball too. Shows his skill level. I mean, he's got good hands. He's going to be a terrific defender for us. Hopefully his knee is going to be okay. I mean, it always worries you when you have a knee injury, but you know, from a standpoint of just what you're looking for, size, speed, He's not a real knock you back type guy yet, but I'm sure he'll develop that. But I'd hold on, try to have the size and speed, and he's definitely physical for sure. But just a real good take, boy. Good to have a guy like him coming in to at position of need. You know, we need linebackers badly, and just glad to have him here. And hopefully, you take advantage of what some other people's problems are your solutions, and you hope that maybe not. I hope that a lot of this stuff at LSU is not, as bad as they're putting it out to be. But you made a good point there. I hadn't even thought about it, and that's why I'd like to read your stuff about recruiting, because I know zilch about it without you. But talking about Smith and maybe looking away from LSU now with that situation down there, boy, that would be unbelievable if we could get him, and then if he could bring Foreman in. But I also want to give you kudos, which nobody says anything about, but with the job that JT Daniels did the other night, our own Jake Rooster was the person that told everybody in America, including the West Coast, the East Coast, Hawaii, Alaska, the moon, JT Daniels was coming here. And that was just unreal scoop. I mean, that to me is a scoop of the year, isn't it, Roddy?
Yeah, that is. I thought that was.
So if you were going to fire him about the romper room, hire him.
I hire him back then. You know,
offsetting penalties.
Well, yeah, exactly, offsetting. So we'll tee it up again, and let's see if he can accurately predict where Mason Smith is going. I think that's Mason Smith and Corey Foreman. Very good notes Jake had the other day. I thought those were very impressive. And Jake sometimes is very subtle in his comments on the board. You know, I think I like where Georgia sits with this guy. And that's because he's sitting on a commitment story sometimes, you know. Sneaky bugger.
Just to be clear, I'm not in this instance.
I know. But
don't plant that seed. Don't put that evil on me.
You do
plant.
I agree with that.
But I do feel like that we're sitting a little bit better because of that information. I would think.
No question.
A lot of parents.
That's what I was saying. This isn't a situation where Jake knows more. It's a situation where Jake does his feelings and some of the scuttlebutt that he has shared with us has panned out. And I think if Jake says, hey, look, Georgia's in a better spot and Alabama's in a better spot than they were last week, that's good gospel. It's correct. So does that mean that Mason Smith and Corey Foreman are coming to Georgia? No. It just means you're in a better spot. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you find out where those guys sign. And I do want to go back and give Jake all the credit in the world. A lot of people in this business tend to wait for us to break some news, and then they slap a clickbaity headline on it and they run with it, confirmed or not. And they immediately take the news and get a million clicks off of stuff that Jake puts out there. And Jake said, hey, JT Daniels is coming to Georgia. And we're like, no, the USC kid? No, come on. They got Jamie Newman. And I saw a lot of people saying, basically calling Jake out, saying he's full of crap. And
you remember when
400 yards and four touchdowns later, Jake Roos was right. So
you remember when I called you about?
Oh God, yeah.
And I said, listen, this is what I got, and I'm nervous about it. I mean, yeah, I knew the fallout would be bad.
I was in a Roos's parking lot in Orange Beach, and I've never covered the distance between that grocery store and the house faster than I did. You know, and I blow through the door, and my son's like, what's up? I'm like, don't talk to me.
I like to imagine you stiff armed him out of the way.
No, he's too big.
All right. So like I said, Smile Munden, the huge pickup. Thanks everybody for the nice words, but Smile Munden, big pickup. We had that one last week. Make sure to go check out all the coverage.
So who's next, Jake?
Hey, were there any gasp in the crowd when he grabbed that LSU hat initially?
There were. That was a little, that was a fun little diversion he had. And
a little okie doke.
you know, Twitter picked up on that and said, maybe this is the new, Quay Walker ditching the Tennessee hat. Smile did happen to say after the commitment, which I thought was really funny. He said, well, I wasn't going to do that to a team that had recruited me very consistently. So it was pretty obvious that things with LSU maybe not come to fruition as strongly as it would indicate by having their hat on the table. All right, I do want to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving before we get into this week's mouthwatering players, because Dane has a terrible take on Twitter, and I think we need to embarrass him.
Lovely take,
I think that he should feel bad about it. And personally,
well, we also need to point out the cousin it behind him on the screen.
Yeah. I got that question. What the hell is the thing behind Dane?
Yeah, I've got
it's pom poms from different SEC games, man.
Different.
Why would you have that?
Because we collect the pom-poms when I would go cover SEC games. I'll hop into the crowd and get one. That's a Georgia. I think this was Kentucky when they went all silver. We collect the pom-poms.
Collect stamps. The fans.
Oh, well.
That's way less cool.
Fortunately, you're married, and that doesn't have any connotation to it for the Wow. Good memories.
Well, there's a little Tennessee orange in there. Now, guys, what are you looking forward to on the
what's his garbage take on Twitter now? I mean, well, first it was JT Daniels sucks. Now it's something else.
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is a guy we need to be paying attention to, right? I mean, no. Dane said that Thanksgiving food, if it was better, we would cook it more often and that we would enjoy it more often. And the fact that we don't do that shows that it is an inferior meal and an inferior food to some degree.
These kids and their damn hot takes.
That's a wonderful take, and I've got some support.
I will have you know that in October, my wife brought home a bag of cranberries at my request to make her cranberry salad, because we don't do the thing that comes out of the big can that pops out. She makes it with oranges, and it's phenomenal. And I had her as a request. We've already had two batches of cranberry sauce. So that's because it is phenomenal, and it's not one of the situations that you can do it. And the reason people don't cook stuffing and turkey and all that stuff every meal is not because it's not good. It's because some things are worth savoring. Some traditions are worth holding back. We don't have the Masters every weekend, but it's pretty nice to have once a year.
I would like to have the Masters more often. They just won't do it.
I can tell you this. You can't have oyster dressing enough for me.
Strong choice. I'm a dressing guy myself too. That's for me. I look forward to Thanksgiving for that reason and that reason alone. Dressing at my granny's house, and out of the park, man.
Yeah, y'all gonna make me cry, because you know my dad passed away in February, and this will be the first one without him. But I remember my grandmother would make dressing, and you know, she'd cook cornbread. That was my We would ask for cornbread for a birthday cake. You know, it's like our birthday. Hey, Grandma, don't bring me a present. Can you make me my own pan of cornbread that I don't have to share with my four brothers? We would literally ask for that. It was how much we loved cornbread. Then she'd make two pans of it, then take and crumble it up and put in the celery and the buttermilk and all that stuff. And so it was mostly cooked. But I remember my dad would say, Dorothy, hold some out. And he wanted the dressing before it was cooked, before it was baked, because it was made from that cooked cornbread with some buttermilk and all the other stuff in it. So technically it was raw, and Dad would want it to the side. And
oh, yeah,
again, you just couldn't do that every weekend. It's although we would have loved it, but yeah, it was specialty, and that's kind of what makes it special. Is if you deny yourself that monthly, weekly pleasure of some of these menu items just so you can have them on Thanksgiving and realize how special it is.
Dane said he wanted to cook pizza for Thanksgiving, and I was offended.
I like pizza way more than turkey, and I don't like gravy at all. I think that's one of my issues. Like, I don't eat gravy any time of the year. Yeah, I'm weird like that.
Yeah, we're going to have to go back to three people on this show.
You don't eat biscuits and gravy?
Well, and frankly, I'll tell you one thing with this too. My parents aren't that great of cooks, so I love eating the best stuff from them.
See, now we get to the crux of the issue.
Now look,
here's the thing. Shitty food.
My grandparents, awesome. And my parents do a couple things well, but like my dad likes a steak well done. So to this day, I just don't eat a lot of steak because I'm like, man, I had a lot of bad steak growing up.
Sure.
Even though I know there's good steak out there.
All right. Let's move beyond this because Dane's take is terrible. Let's see if we can get a better take for him in this week. Mouthwatering players. It's South Carolina this weekend. A decimated South Carolina team. Just about everything that could have gone wrong for them this season has. Marshawn Lloyd blows out his ACL. Will Muschamp gets fired. Three starters out in the defensive backfield. Just a really tough situation all around. So it's a little bit similar to last week. So, guys, who you got? Mouth-watering player this week. Who's going to step it up against the Gamecocks? Dane, we'll start with you.
I want to see if the downfield passing continues. I think it will because South Carolina just lost its entire secondary to opt-outs. And like I said, there's been some injuries too. So I'm going to say George Pickens. Burton had his big day. I think it's Pickens' time.
All right, Roddy, who you got, buddy?
Well, I keep saying James Cook, and I don't get anywhere with that. But I think this is – and, you know, you got to love the fact that Mississippi State said, we are not going to let you run on us. We're going to bring a ton of guys on every play. And, you know, you can't run six against eight. So, but I don't think South Carolina is going to do the same thing. I think you'll see the return of Georgia's running game. I think they'll probably want to lather up Zamir White in this game. So Zamir White will be my mouthwatering player of the game against South Carolina.
Okay. All right. Two offensive guys. I guess I got to go somewhere on defense. I'm going to go, let's see. I think this one plays in well for a guy like Monty Rice. I think that he can kind of be all over the field. He's done that. It's not like Shai Smith's out this game, so he's not going to have to play as much coverage as maybe he normally would. I think that Monty racks up some tackles this week for the Bulldogs. Coach, who you got?
You know, I think they're going to go with Doty, a quarterback who is a, you know, an athletic type guy on the run. And so I'm going to go with Azeez Olarji, just because I think he's going to have to make some tackles in space on the quarterback keeps and things like that. I think he has a big game rushing a passer and also making a lot of tackles on the zone read.
How about the just finish by Azeez the other night, man? I mean, he's like a WWF wrestler.
He and Anderson
got the move.
He and Anderson both. And I hope he finishes and gets his brother to transfer.
I want to give a call out too to the play before that where William Poole, now he didn't make the tackle, but he made sure he was there in space to allow the guys to get there to force that that fourth down play. William Poole was a name I did not expect to call out heading into that
game. Yeah, I didn't expect to call out Adam Anderson as much and see Robert Beal play as much as he did. So, and I like that Kirby kind of tipped his hand a little bit earlier in the year. I mentioned this on the watch along. Earlier in the week, when he was asked a question about the outside linebackers, and he said, you know, you guys don't see enough of Robert Beal and what Adam Anderson are doing in practice. Okay, don't know why you're bringing them up other than they're in that kind of outside linebacker group. But sure enough, come Saturday, those guys played a ton of snaps. So I thought that was a nice little foreshadowing move on Kirby's part right there. And I'm sure hopefully they appreciated the call outs, and I hope they appreciated the extra playing time. But you got to like it when you can bring in a new, you know, okay, hey, Azeez, step out. Here comes Jermaine Johnson. Jermaine, step out. We got Robert Beal coming in. Oh, here comes Nolan Smith. Still, I'd like coach's pick of Azeez for this weekend. And if not him, somebody from that group, because he was fresh as a daisy when he ran out there. So it's great to see that, like you said, that finishing move. How many games has he ended?
It feels like a lot, man. And you know what the thing about it is to me, he's the guy, and I made this comparison when he was in high school. It's like Lorenzo Carter when he came up and blocked that kick against Oklahoma. You know, that was the X factor, just the finishing move, essentially. Yeah. And so I think that Azeez got a little bit of that too.
Definitely. What was it, Auburn last year?
I believe it was, yes.
Yeah, he made a tackle on Nick, so.
There you go.
Well, I hope we get to play this week. That's my major.
Yeah, keep your fingers crossed, folks, and don't – no, jeez. That's all the time we have for this week's show. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday. Thanks to Athens Ford, Your Pie, Academia Brewing Company, Aired Overhead Doors, Masada Leather, and DR Construction Maintenance. And when you get a chance, check out our sponsors, and, of course, check out UGASports.com. Right now they have a $75 deal sign up for 1 year of UGASports.com, get your first year for free. I'm assuming you get your first year for $75 and get a free $75 gift card to the Nike store. So you get all the cool Nike gear. So that pretty much effectively makes your first year free. You spend $75, get $75 in Nike gear. Can't hurt to try it. Promo code Nike75, N-I-K-E 75. We'll talk to you folks next week. Take care.
Happy Thanksgiving.